Blog Talk Radio.
Archangels, ghosts, and Bigfoot. Oh my! It's just another night for Supernatural Girls. Real stories, real answers to life's biggest supernatural mysteries. And now for another exciting interview with paranormal experts from this world and others. Psychic medium Helene Olson and paranormal researcher Patricia Baker. Here are Supernatural Girls.
Everyone, to another exciting episode of Supernatural Girls. We are now at Spooky October, and first of all, I want to welcome back psychic medium extraordinaire Helene Olson. Hi, Helene. How are you tonight?
I'm doing better than last week, that's for sure, but I got to tell you, there's some super bugs out there that just don't want to leave. It's amazing.
Isn't that pathetic?
I mean, it just started as a cold, just a little cold, and then it just blew up into this other thing. And I've been on antibiotics for a week, and it's still not gone.
Oh, how frustrating. That's awful. Yeah. Well, we all need to be careful. I kind of think we should all be wearing masks at this point, you know? And those little plastic gloves.
Well, I don't know. I refuse to go there yet, but,
yeah. They do strange. That in, what, Japan or China or somewhere?
Someplace
they're
Asia,
wearing
yeah.
that stuff. I don't even know if it matters, but I'm glad that you're back on the show. We missed you last week. We had Patricia Kirkman doing readings, and it was fun, and we always, of course, love it when you chime in with your comments and add your depth to the readings, and oh, my goodness. So we missed you very much. I'm glad you're back.
Yeah, but Patricia Kirkman's awesome, so
he is.
That's great.
He's
yeah.
super awesome, and we've been doing lots of fun stuff. Thanks to you, we had the crystal bed here. And all kinds of people came for sessions and had these remarkable experiences. And it was just like you explained, Helene. Everybody has a totally different experience with these
crystal beds. Well, they do. And I was on the bed three times and had three different experiences.
See, isn't that exciting?
Yeah.
It's like it's alive. It's a living treatment. It's not
well, it
sick.
Is.
Yeah.
It's alive, all right, Patricia. That's a good way to put it, because John of God attached his healing entities to that bed, and boy, do they show up.
Well, thank you very much for bringing Patrick Mannion here. It was very exciting having him around for that entire day, and we're hoping to bring him back again. It was very, very exciting, very healing. People had lots of stories to tell. It was a great day. Just a great day.
Well, maybe next time I'll make it out there too. But I have to say, you know, when I checked in with my guides about the crystal beds, they all work. There are just about 50 of them around in the United States, so people can find them in their area if they look up John of God healing bed. But in eastern Massachusetts, Patrick is the guy that I got sort of directed to, and I have to tell you, I haven't experienced anyone else's crystal bed. But he truly is a facilitator of the bed. He knows John of God, and he's been to Brazil many times. And he really is facilitating anybody's healing on there and connecting them in a big way. So it's worth a trip out to Western Mass next time you have it. But I'll be writing some more about the crystal bed healing on my newsletter at angelslighthouse.com, so people will have more information.
Well, that's an important thing, to make sure that everybody out there is subscribed to angelslighthouse.com newsletter and also to Supernatural Girls newsletter, so that you can find out about all these great things and where they're happening, as well as following us on Twitter and everywhere else that we are, Google+, Facebook, you name it, we're there. And please make sure you're a part of that community so you don't miss anything that we're up to. We also had an interesting experience at the graveyard that was local, and it was so much fun being there on a beautiful sunny day, taking some footage, because Helene, you and I are going to be moving more into the video medium, and certainly we are working with New Dominion on a new television series, and we're taking footage and having fun with it. And there was a man mowing the lawn that was somewhat near the graveyard, and afterwards he came over to say hello when we were done with the filming, and he shared with us, and thank God we all pulled out the cameras to get this live on film, that when he was mowing, he would glance over and he would see three of us there, but then he would also look again and see a crowd of people around us. And he said at first he thought it was a trick of the light, but he kept looking back and he kept seeing a crowd of people around us. And now we have a video. We're going to edit this down so we can post it so people can hear what he had to say when he was watching us in that graveyard. So I think, Colleen, we had quite a bit of company that day.
Yeah, but I'm wondering, was it company that we've been working with, or was it company from the gravesite?
You know, that's a good question. And my guess is it was from the gravesite, pretty much,
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
we asked the man that was there with us, were they human-looking? And he said they were human-looking. The fight thought it was a crowd of people. He said they did look a little shadowy, though. So,
yeah.
Yeah, we'll have to see what happens when you and I get there. I can't wait.
That'll be fun.
Going to be fun, definitely.
Yeah.
So we've
yeah.
got a great, great show planned for tonight. Of course, we have Patricia Kirkman coming on very soon to talk about what we can expect from a number two day, which is tomorrow, and our latest celebrity. And we have Von Broschler. What a great name. Do you not love that name?
I love the name, but what I love more is the subject matter.
Well, this
because
is your bailiwick.
It's right up my alley. And
this is your deal. I want you to just take over and just talk to this man.
Well, when he gets started, I know he'll agree with me from what I saw in his book, but I've always been on the radio for years telling people, please don't watch paranormal shows and then run down to the cemetery at midnight and think you're going to rescue people, you know.
Yeah,
because they really
idea.
Don't know what they're in for. They really don't. And then they're
they
screaming on my phone because something followed them home that they don't want. And people really have to learn about protection and know what they're dealing with before they get involved in this work. You know,
well,
and I think
really
it's changed
do.
A lot, too.
Yeah,
I think it's changed a lot. I mean, I think the energy of the earth has changed, and a lot of the things that we see now are not human.
Well, that's certainly
not.
The truth, and that's
yeah.
what I'm hoping you will speak with Von Broschler about. I just love his name.
Yeah, I'm
it's
impressed
so
with
powerful.
Him. Yeah, very impressed, yeah.
So he has a new book out called Confessions of a Reluctant Ghost Hunter, a cautionary tale of encounters with malevolent entities and other disembodied spirits. We're going to talk to him in just a couple minutes, but first we need to get our numbers figured out here. So we need to get Patricia on the line with us. And Patricia, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. It's great to be with you two lovely ladies.
Thank you. So we got a number two day coming up tomorrow. What can we all expect
That's
with that?
Right. Well, first we have to take a look at, we are in a brand new month, and the month is all about our finances universally, everybody, just regardless of what their personal things are. And the eight is about our money, coming or going, but money, being in charge, being in control. And a two-day dealing with money has to do with being very willing to give up much of what you have and to be there to help others participate in what their needs are, possibly coming out of our pocket. But a two-day will make people very sensitive to everything going on around them, which could also make them very insensitive if the people that are more of the eight type are a little too pushy and a little hard-nosed to deal with. So it's going to be interesting. But for the most part, think in terms of this. Sensitivity, peacemaker, being there to help another.
Well, that
Don't
we
like
can
that
do.
One, huh?
I like that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that we can definitely do. But the part
yeah.
about the money going out of the pocket, we don't like that so much. So.
No, I don't either. And it's all month long. And to me, I like it even less. It's what the year I'm going into. So everyone, pay attention. The month you're in is the direction of which you're going to be going for the next 12 months.
Hmm.
It's giving you a brief preview of where you're going.
Okay, so this is like the preview, this is like the movie trailer, so we need to pay attention
That's
to tomorrow.
Right.
Oh, boy.
Exactly.
And we've got a beautiful young celebrity to talk about. She's one of the stars that was in The Originals, a spinoff from The Vampire Diaries. And Claire Holt is lovely. And yet I hear she's not going to be a regular in the show anymore. How disappointing. So what's going on with Claire?
Well, the bottom line is I think she's been in a sixth personal year. I think there's issues within marriage and family stuff, and I think she's pulling back because she's going to change what she's doing or who she's doing. I'd say she's going to take about a year hiatus in many areas, not totally closing the doors, but looking for something other than what's been happening. It's going to be a year that's karmic, so maybe she's going to decide to sit down and figure out what she's going to be when she grows up. There's a lot of changes going on around her.
Yeah, she was a compelling character on The Originals. I loved watching her. And then you told me she was done with the show, that they had kind of decided her character had come to an end, and I was rather disappointed. So, anyways... That's too bad, but it sounds like she's going to be going through an internal journey that
definitely.
We all have to go through. So,
definitely.
Yeah. Oh, my
but
goodness.
But I think in 2 years from now, we're going to hear some major stuff coming from her, but I think she needs this next year to rediscover who she is.
Uh-huh. Well, I wish her the best. I know we all do. She's very talented, and I hope she finds an awakening within herself that brings her more joy.
That would be lovely. That would be lovely.
Yes, and then next week and for the rest of October, we're going to be talking about spooky numbers. We're going to move a little bit away from our celebrity experience, and we're going to be talking about spooky times, dates, places. So be sure to tune in, everybody, next week. Patricia's going to have a lot of surprises for us. So we're going to always be looking for these numbers, and now it's spooky time. So, spooky October, here we are. So, Patricia, thank you so much.
More than welcome.
Look forward to hearing from you again next week.
Looking forward to it, and have a wonderful show, ladies.
Thank you.
Good night, Patricia.
Here's the rest of it. Good night.
Good night.
So... here we are, Colleen. This is your thing. This is a great guest to have.
No, it's
on
your thing too, Patricia.
Yes, it is. But you're the expert. You've been doing this a lot longer than I have. And now we're bringing to the show our guest, Von Brashler, a former faculty member at Omega Institute for Holistic Studies. He's led workshops throughout the United States and the UK. He's a lifetime member of the Theosophical Society and the author of several books, including Seven Secrets of Time Travel. We got to talk about that, too. He lives in St. Paul, Minnesota, and he is the author of a fascinating book, Confessions of a Reluctant Ghost Hunter, A Cautionary Tale of Encounters with Malevolent Entities and Other Disembodied Spirits. Von, welcome to the show.
Hi, Patricia. Hi, Helene. How are you?
I'm good.
We're great.
It's an honor to talk to you. Yeah.
Please do tell us.
Talking about my subject.
Yes. Well, you and Helene have a lot to talk about here. I'm going to let you guys really just take over the show. But do tell us. I mean, you kind of got into this a little bit reluctantly. You didn't think it was going to be your thing, but it truly is. So tell us what happened.
Let's say I backed into it. I've always been a little psychic. I could always very often when other people wouldn't notice anything odd in the room, I would hear or see or sense ghosts. I could sense the coldness, the emptiness, the uneasiness. Rooms would be cold. I could hear footsteps, voices. I'd catch them out of the corner of my eye. Sometimes they'd pop right in front of me, and they'd be as surprised as I was that we'd shared the same space briefly. But I never knew what to say to them. And then I had a teacher, Lewis Gittner, out at Orcas Island in the San Juans, off the coast of Seattle there. And he was working with me, years ago. And probably my first teacher. Very psychic man. Wonderful author. And I went out there to see him one time, and he was busy, and he sent out a secretary whose name was Helen. And she comes out and she said, well, Lewis is busy, but he thought maybe you would find what I had to say interesting. And I said, well, what do you do? And she said, well, I'm a secretary. I said, what does that involve? She said, well, you know, I take care of the foundation. He had an inn. It was an innkeeper and a restaurant. And the foundation is a nonprofit. And I take care of his publishing efforts and his speaking engagements and his travel. And oh, and then on the side, this is apart from what we do here at the foundation, she said, I deghost houses. And my jaw just drops open because I'm just sitting there drinking, you know, morning coffee in his wonderful little dining room. You do what? She said, I do ghost houses. She said, well, let me explain. She says, I'll get a call on a referral, and people will say their house is haunted. She said, sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. Sometimes it is exactly what they think. There's a ghost in the house, and sometimes it's something else. Sometimes it's just their imagination. Sometimes it's their problem entirely. But I go in and I ask them to leave, and I rummage about the house, and then I get very still and I listen. She's very psychic, and she said, I ground myself, I center myself, and I listen. And then I contact them and I communicate. And if there is a dearly departed spirit there, someone who's died, you know, I encourage them to leave, because very often what I'll find is a woman sitting on a sofa with a handbag and a hat and a coat, ready to go, or a man who's holding a hat in one hand and a cane in the other, and he's ready to go, but he's a little bit reluctant, a little bit confused, a little bit nervous, a little bit afraid. Maybe something's holding him back. Maybe he likes the people who live there. Maybe he's confused that he's even dead. And so I encourage them to do what is quite natural, and that is to move on. And so she, you know, she spent a couple of days training me. She said, well, you can obviously see them, and I think you can contact them, and now you'll know what to do if it ever comes necessary for you to do anything at all. And I said, well, I don't want to be a deghoster of houses, Helen. That's your thing. I said, I'm a journalist. So she said, okay. Well, she said, obviously, there was some reason why Lewis put us together, and there was, clever Lewis. And she said, there might be come a time when you have a friend or a neighbor who has a haunted house and needs someone to help them. And then you know how to help them if you're willing. And now you can do it if you want. It's up to you. So life went on for a while, and everything was fine, and then I moved to back to Oregon, and I'm living on Mount Hood, in a beautiful Mount Hood area, and which is enchanted in itself. There are lots of nature spirits out there, just incredible. Tree spirits, wonderful place. Love it, love it, love it. Indian, where I lived was a summer campground for the Indians in Brightwood and near Warm Springs. And there were all kinds of stories of Indians who had lived there and died there and had special ceremonies there. And I would sometimes see them. I would see, you know, the spirits of the Indians. And, well, things went along just fine for a while. And then I started getting calls, and someone said, well, you know a little bit about this. Well, then you have to make a decision. Are you going to help or just walk away? Well, you know, then I got involved. And frankly, you know, I bit off a little more than I could chew, because I found out that not everybody who haunts a house is somebody's dear departed Aunt Ruth.
That's
sometimes
right.
It's something quite else. And sometimes they are departed spirits. They've been there a long time and they just don't want to go, and they won't go. And if you just, you know, if you just don't respect that, they will just get very angry.
Yes,
and
they do.
That's not good. That's not good. So I think I learned a lot from the experience. I had three difficult hauntings when I was up there. And I suppressed these memories for many years. And I said, well, you know, I'll write books about auras and chakra healing and healing with your pet and energy healing. And I'll write books about time and dreams and consciousness development. And I kept saying that my next book is going to be called Moving in the Light. That was everybody laughs, because what they say, what's your next book? It's going to be called Moving in the Light. So right now I'm in fact working on a book called Moving in the Light. This was supposed to be called Moving in the Light. And so they said, okay, because I'd gone to another publisher, wonderful folks in Rochester, Vermont, Inner Traditions, they said, so you're working on a movie in light, right? I said, yeah, absolutely. And then, boom, I write this ghost book. And you know what it was? All those years I'd suppressed it. It was kind of like, how would you say? I just didn't want to deal with it. It was just so ugly, and I just kind of put it out of my head, you know? And I didn't want to talk about it or think about it. I certainly didn't want to write about it. And then I realized that I just had to get it out of me. So I had to write this book. So I wrote the book for the people who lived through it and those who didn't, and it's their story. And it's basically true, except I changed a few names and dates just so nobody would know exactly who they are and bother them. Mm-hmm. But it's essentially it. I was working at as a publisher of a community newspaper at the time, so there were certain things I couldn't put in the newspaper, and a lot of them had to do with ghosts and haunted houses. Mm-hmm. So this was my story.
Well,
are you?
Go ahead, Helene.
No, go ahead, Patricia.
Well, I'm just saying that Helene and I were just so thrilled to have you on the show because you're one of the few people who really provides a sense of caution and also explains this is why people need to be cautious. And again, Helene, you've said this to people until you're blue in the face, and they sometimes don't get it because paranormal adventure is really big on television right now, and everybody thinks that they can go out and do the same thing. And what a lot of people may or may not know is some of those things are faked. A lot of people say they're all faked. It's not.
They're not all faked.
But some people say.
But even the ones that aren't faked, you know, they're probably misleading as to what they've got.
Exactly. That's the right word for all of this that's on television.
Uh-huh.
It can be. Some of it, like you said, Helene, is real. I mean, Paranormal Witness does fabulous recreations of true stories, and so does The Haunting. But at the same time, there are a lot of other Hunting for Monster shows that aren't. And it leads people to believe things that aren't real, and that it doesn't give them the kind of safety zone that they need going into this. But this is what you talk about in your book, and this is what, Helene, you talk about all the time. So it's great that you wrote this.
I really originally just wanted to call it Ghosts. It was an all-black title and just white letters, Ghosts, and the subtitle was A Cautionary Tale. And they said, well, that's pretty drab, you know. It's like, you know, tell it like it is. I said, well, you know, I just want people to know that they have, you know, it's not all fun and games, and these... I agree with you. These reality shows and these celebrity ghost shows and these ghost stalkers that go in and chase ghosts around and harass them, they're just poking up a hornet's nest, and it's very unethical. It's immoral, and shame on them, you know. And it's not fun and it's not safe. And people.
Well, the other thing is that the paranormal investigators, as they call themselves. Generally, what it seems like to me, and I actually spoke to a client this past week about this, is that they come in because they're not trying to correct the situation or make the home safe or anything. They're just looking for evidence of a disembodied spirit, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes they get in trouble themselves. They're not really clear on how to protect their energy or what they're doing when they go in there other than looking for evidence. And they can actually exacerbate the situation in a large way.
You bring up a great point. You know, you can make a situation much worse if your intent is simply to go in there and stir up trouble. Boy, you're going to get it. You know,
mm-hmm.
And you know the thing I have to say that my teacher Helen, though, back on Orcas Island. You know, she was ethical because what she tried to do was actually resolve a situation. I mean, it's a very noble thing to help people who have recently departed to fully move on. And I always try to assure people that I'm quite convinced that the greater part of you always goes on, moves on, you know, evolves, goes beyond this earth, leaves the earth, you know, your soul, your essential life force. But the lower parts of you sometimes will hang around. There'll be elements of you or fragments of you. There'll be like your lower personality, some dim memory of the shell of a person you once were. And they're very confused and disoriented. It'll be the lower mind, the lower personality, the emotional body. You know, there's not the same, you know, light switch that was there once when the higher parts of you did move on. And to go in and try to help these people fully move on, this is wonderful, you know, because
mm-hmm.
it resolves the situation where people live in a very creepy house, you know, and mm-hmm. it helps them, you know. And sometimes I think now the best thing you can tell people, if you can't resolve the situation, just move, you know, learn to live with it, move around it, or move away. Because, you know, some of these spirits, and some of them are departed people, they're ghosts, they've been there so long that they're so confused and so disoriented, they just won't move on. And I've encountered those, and there's not a whole lot you can do. I mean, you can try, you know, but you'll just make them mad if you keep trying. That's been my experience.
That's interesting, because I've had a different experience with that, by and large. I've found ghosts that absolutely know they're ghosts and want to stay exactly where they are. It's not a fragment. It's
yeah.
not a piece of them. But
yeah.
One thing I do that's a little bit different than other people is I work with the angelic realm. So
mm-hmm.
if something really needs to leave, they will come and get it, which amazes me. That's not my first go-to thing, but it has happened that they've come right in and taken the spirit.
Oh, absolutely.
Where it needs to go when that's absolutely necessary.
I'm a firm
necessary.
Believer on calling on angelic help.
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it usually comes, you know, if it's needed and if it's proper that you should get it.
Mm-hmm.
You're not
mm-hmm.
making an unrealistic request
mm-hmm.
that you'll get it.
Mm-hmm.
But I used to tell people that when you encounter a spirit, whether it's a former human spirit or
mm-hmm.
something else which never was human, and you're haunted by this spirit, that you really shouldn't worry. They'll frighten you, they'll scare you out of your wits, they'll disorient you, they'll mess up your house. I had, you know, my house messed up many times. But they can't hurt you, I would say, because, you know, they have no hands, they have no teeth, you know, they have no feet, you know, they can't strangle you, they can't shoot you, they can't knock you down. I no longer tell people that, you know.
No.
I no longer tell people that.
Their energy
because,
can be so powerful, yeah.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, and you speak about that in your book. You actually encountered a ghost that was choking people in their sleep.
Yeah, that was awful, and I'm not really so sure that was actually a typical ghost. I think that was some other kind of spirit.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever it was very deadly. It was very angry and it was very protective and it was it was pretty psychotic, I guess we would say, if it were a human, because it liked the little girl who lived in the trailer, didn't like her dog, didn't like her mother, didn't like her stepfather,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it obviously had killed and chased people out before, and it wasn't going to leave, and, you know, and I tried to get it out, and for a while I did, and it just only got mad when I tricked it, just got mad as could be. And
mm-hmm.
It's fun thing was to strangle people.
That's horrifying.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think, you know, you can say, well, they gave you the illusion that you were being strangled because you didn't have any like marks on your neck. But when you're gasping for air, you know, I have to say, what's the difference? You can't breathe.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, they can actually use their energy to smother you in a way.
Yeah.
It feels like choking as well. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there are some things out there where the ghost hunter, if you want to call it that, is terribly outmatched and outgunned and outwitted. And that's when you need to leave. So, I mean, this is really a cautionary tale. I mean, I do give some basic hints about how to deal with ghosts, and I think many of us have seen them. You know, your father dies, your mother dies, maybe your dog dies, and they'll come to visit you briefly after they die. Maybe they'll stay around for days.
That's a really common story, isn't
they're
it? That
common.
They're
flash
still really
in front
connected
of your
to
eye.
The earth plane. Yeah.
They are, but it's mm-hmm. usually briefly, and it's
mm-hmm.
on their terms. And they're saying
mm-hmm.
goodbye, and I think that's mm-hmm. a very legitimate, safe, natural spirit connection, you know, because they're saying goodbye. They love you. But, you know, I had a woman who died in my house, and I'm writing her story now of her death transition. It'll be called, by the way, Moving in the Light. And and poor Deb, you know, when she died, she came and visited her cat. I saw her play with the cat. And I said, that's really nice. She came to visit the cat after she died. And then she goes in her bedroom and she's playing the stereo. That was interesting. And then her parents came and moved everything out. And then the next day, I heard the stereo. But you know, in a few days, you know, she understood she was dead. She knew it. You know, she had a connection. She didn't want to die. She was 33 years old.
So I go out
to the cemetery, and she's buried. Because her parents were Catholic, and she's buried in a Catholic cemetery. But she didn't want her ashes spread there. She wanted them spread out over the forest
mm-hmm.
north of here on the country. And that's where we put most of the ashes. Some went
mm-hmm.
into the cemetery. And mm-hmm. They never knew how many ashes she had. I mean, you have a lot of ashes when you incinerate
mm-hmm.
a person. But we had two urns is the point. And so I go out there and I'm wandering around the cemetery because I went to the I was one of the pallbearers, but I didn't go out to the burial. So a week later I go out there to the cemetery and I'm wandering around and I say inside my head, I said, Deb, where are you? And as clear as day I hear inside my head Deb's voice saying, you won't find me here. I'm gone. I thought, good for you.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I tell people, that cemetery is just an energy field. Granny isn't
yeah.
there anymore. You know, it attracts other energies, and people are there
thinking about
their loved ones, you know.
It does attract energy, mm-hmm. you know, and Granny's really not there, but the fact that their bones are there, you know, there is a kind of a conflagration of spirits there sometimes.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And I advocate people opting for cremation now. I know that mm-hmm. I'll get an argument about this perhaps, but I think it makes more sense that you just, when you leave the earth, you leave the earth. That's it.
Mm.
Not a trace.
Mm.
Nothing here to hold you back, in other words.
No.
Now, you talk about the tools that you learned about from Helen, who was such a wonderful teacher to you and such a gentle teacher. I want to add that.
Yes.
Yeah, very gentle, the way even she approached ghosts as if they were her relatives, even though they weren't. And she was so friendly and kind to them. And
very kindly.
What a wonderful way to learn about this rather than the hunter mm-hmm. mentality. So,
right.
But she did talk to you about some things I was familiar with, but some I wasn't. Now, obviously, the holy water.
She had an unusual approach. I don't know how she came up with it, except that, like Lewis, she was quite psychic, and this is what worked for her. This is how she did it. This was kind of her homemade recipe, I guess. And some of it I understood, like the salting and the steaks in the ground. You know,
mm-hmm.
the holy water, I didn't quite get that, except when I tried water on the trailer spirit, it just made it mad as a hornet.
Oh, it makes me mad.
Oh, my gosh, it made
me
mad, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I was a marked man. It's like, man, I said, what have I done? You know,
you
got to finesse your way through these situations. But, so, I mean, she was a kindly spirit, and I kind of lost contact with her. I described in the book where when I got really stuck, I tried to find her, and I found Lewis, and I found out why Lewis had set me up. You know, so, I mean, Lewis set me up because he wanted me to know that in the spirit realm, you know, things come and go, you know, and it's kind of confusing, and people will hitch a ride through the cracks in the earth. And it's like,
mm-hmm.
it's a little dangerous to dabble into the spirit world and think you can come back alone with no hitchhikers. And And Helen, though, you know, she had such good energy, such good karma that she was a facilitator. She would go in and actually help people. And so she never had any really bad experiences. Really, not really. I mean, she always got the right ones. I got the icky ones.
It all depends on what your purpose is, though, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Tell us more, if you could, about the tools, because I think our audience would like to hear how you use these particular tools, especially the mirror, because the mirror, that's a really interesting one.
The mirror, you know, I always thought the mirror was, you know, very mystical. And a long time ago, I'd studied Rosicrucian a little bit, the Rosicrucian philosophy, and they teach about the magic of the mirror. And, of course, the mirror is very special. It's very alchemical, if you will. It transmutes, crosses the divide between earth and sky. And I mean, it can be gaseous. The elements in the mirror are at one point liquid, at one point substance, at one point, you know, gaseous. And then ultimately, it's a reflection. But it's reflection the way we see, and the way we see is, of course, like the old style camera. We take a picture of things as light bounces off of it. So it's light bouncing off of a mirror, and then you see it upside down, and then you have to hook it up right side up in your head. And so this is how the mirror presents the world to us. And if it's slightly distorted, you know, that's just kind of the way you're approaching it. You know, you get a convex. Anyway, I think mirrors are quite fascinating. But she said, carry a mirror. And I said, why would I carry a mirror? You know, and this is the kid that asked Helen. I said, why would I carry holy water? Where do I get it? She said, well, just get some. Just get some. Write it down. Write it down. And so these are the like a shopping list, you know, butter, you know, bread. You know.
Holy
so,
water.
And so, yeah, holy water. And I said, well, you know, I don't know where to get holy water. She said, oh, okay, well, just write it down. So, you know, I ended up using water that had been outside. Well, my herbalist friend up there, who actually had the trouble with the trailer, she was teaching me different things, and one of the things was that you could put a quartz crystal in a glass container of water, set it out overnight in the moonlight, and in the morning, the water would be altered, you know, and it would be sweeter and softer and healthful, you know. Now there's some bit of experiments like this, you know, but you know. Going all the way back and even more recently, you know, this is not at all far-fetched. But the holy water, I think she wanted me to get was to go to church and get some holy water. Well, I didn't do that, but I got some water and just having water thrown at him. Well, the other thing was the mirror, and the mirror was something that she said I should have, and I said, she said, do you know about mirror magic, right? And, well, I'm a student of Lewis Gittner. Of course, I got to know something about, you know, mirror magic. And I said, not really. I said, I know they're very mystical. I went into basically what I just told you. And she said, okay. Well, that's probably beyond you, you know. But write it down nonetheless. And, you know, it kind of was my last resort when I was dealing with this hideous thing in the trailer. Was I'd done everything I could think of. I couldn't communicate with it. I just got it angry and angrier. And when I cornered it and tried to make contact and communicate with it, it was starting to look at me like lunch, you know, I was swooping in for the kill. And so I knew I had to do something rather drastic. And so I trapped it in the mirror, you know, I said, now thinking that, you know, this poor thing is a spirit and not like you or me, not a physical person. I said, well, wouldn't you like to have form like me? Wouldn't you like to be able to see a reflection in the mirror like me? And I have no idea if this is what Helen had in mind, but it worked. and I could sense, you know, fascination, you know. And I showed that I could see myself in the mirror. I said, you cannot see yourself in the mirror because you have no form. I said, I could help you. I could help you get into the mirror. And then I started doing this thing with the flashlight, and kind of like, you know, teasing it, or, you know, going around like you would with a cat, you know, a laser, you know.
Uh-oh.
And I just finally, I just took the light right up to the mirror, and I said, all right, go into the mirror. And then I sensed that it was just all over the mirror, because I had a sense that it was there, but I had seen it at various times when I was in the trailer, but that at that time I was not able to see it. It was very manipulative. And it,
what did it look
it
like?
Let me,
on?
Well, it looked like, to me, it looked like the descriptions I'd always read of like a forest gnome. Now, whether that's what it was or not, it was gangly, long arms, long legs, not tall, spindly, funny shape, dark, dark creature, no hair, red eyes, grimacing, nasty expression. And then it could shapeshift. It would turn itself into a little girl with golden curls.
Oh, they
know?
Love to turn into little girls.
A little girl with golden curls. And,
yeah.
And I said, you are no little girl with golden curls. And that just came right out, because, like, I was trained to speak, you know, telepathically, you know, and I just blurted it out. And it just gave me this nasty sneer and then a smile. And then it turned into a little girl with golden curls. And then I was out of there.
Have you seen them turn into little girls? Have you seen them turn to little girls? And then when you challenge them, they turn around and open up a mouthful of teeth bigger than jaws.
Yeah. Nasty.
Not fun.
So, yeah.
But those aren't people,
so the thing
though.
Was... Yeah, well, I mean, this creature was playing with the little girl in the trailer and trying to befriend it. And I kept telling the little girl, I said, you know, your friend that you can see and your parents can't see, I said, this is not anyone you should be playing with. This is not who it pretends to be. I said, this is not a good situation. But they had no place else to go, so I really had to try to help them get it out. Mm-hmm. Or as Helen would say, de-ghost the house.
So the mirror, you tried to get him to understand he didn't have a form that like we did.
Yeah, and desperately wanted to be, you know, to be, you know, have that ability. So I sensed that it fastened itself all over the mirror, and I grabbed the mirror, and I ran outside, threw it on the front porch, and stomped on it into a lot of pieces. And I said, I think it's out. And I closed the door, and I said, now we must keep it out. And I salted around the ground, and I staked it, and I called on the four archangels. I said, protect this house, guard this house. Then I banished the spirit. You were banished. You cannot go in this house, you know. And then I tried to leave. And I started to drive home. And the car, suddenly the lights go out. And I stopped. And I'm playing with, it was an old British sports car, and I open the bonnet, you know, and I play with it, and then I try the lights again, and then the windshield wipers go instead of the lights.
Oh, no.
And then I can't start it, and then, you know, I'm on a logging trail in the middle of the Mount Hood National Forest. That's what they just lived on, off a logging trail up there, and somebody comes zipping around the corner and almost clips me, and I'm thinking, this isn't good. So I get back in, and I get it going again. I start to go down the hill again, and the lights are going, and it's running okay. And then I feel this thing around my neck, and I feel the strangling around my neck that the husband in the trailer had complained about, because they never saw the parrots. They never saw the little girl with golden curls. They never saw anything. But when they would sleep, they would be startled in their sleep by hands strangling them or something strangling them. And so they came to me and they said, you know, there's something wrong with it in the trailer. Would you look into it? I said, do you think it's haunted? They said, I don't know. There's something in there. Something, because we sleep and then, you know, we're strangled in the middle of the night, and then we go outside, and then we go back, and it's better. But our little girl, Missy, she says that she has a little playmate who's a little girl with golden curls, and together they sit on her bed, and they go through her sketch pad, and well, I mean, yeah. So, you know, it was kind of presenting itself in different ways to different people.
But it sounds
so
like
did you take
what
this
you
home
did,
with you?
Yeah, because it sounded like it was coming home
yeah,
with
so
you.
So finally, so here I'm in the trailer, or in the car, and it starts to strangle me, and so I put on the brakes, and I'm thinking like, okay, now I have to make a decision. Do I try to get home, knowing that it might strangle me, and I'll go off the road and crash into the middle of the forest, and nobody will find me for 2 weeks? Or
right.
What do I do? I said, well, I got to bring it back to the woods. I got to bring it back where I found it. And I said, but they wanted it out. And I said, well, it is out. I said, I salted the trailer. I staked it. It's forbidden to go in the house. I banished it from the house. And I said, I think it'll just roam the woods. How bad can that be? I said, you know, because I can't take it home with me. I probably wouldn't have made it home. So I go back up there, and I knock on the door and say, I'm back. And they said, you're back? I said, yeah. And I told them the story and said, don't bring it back here. And I said, I don't think it's going to get here. So I said, I think it'll just stay out in the woods, and I think it's done with you, but it lives here. Well, they said, well, how do you know it's safe? I said, well, why don't you spend a night here and just see how it goes and let me know. So I'm supposed to check back with them, and the next day I didn't want to go back there. It was too creepy, right? I just wanted to be done with it. Then I said, well, I got to go back there. I said, well, maybe it'll be just fine. We'll just go mushroom hunting, you know, because that was the herbalist lady, and she knew where to get the best mushrooms. So, and blueberries, too, high mountain cranberries. So,
I go up there. I'm going to ask you to hold on to that thought. So we're
yeah.
going to take a very short commercial break, and everybody stay tuned because you're going to want to hear the end of this story, that's for sure. And if you have a question for Vaughn, then call in at 646-478-0828. That's 646-478-0828. Stay tuned, everybody, to hear the end of the story. We will be right back.
This is Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic One Company. As one of the pioneers of the Organic One movement, since 1980, I have brought you the very best and most authentic organic wines directly to your table. I work with small family estates who grow certified organic grapes and produce exceptional wines. You can purchase our wines individually from our website at theorganicwinecompany.com or join one of our wine clubs. Our organic wines are perfect for you and for your family as gifts for friends and relatives, and they are simply spectacular for the holidays. Visit us at theorganicwinecompany.com to enjoy the very best organic wines conveniently delivered to your door. I am Veronique Raskin, passionate about my mission. I offer to you vegan, organic, and biodynamic wines, wines made by people of the heart, wines with a heart. Au revoir. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE.
Are you ready for a new experience of freedom and powerful connection? Would you like a positive, effortless change in your life? Then come to CosmicFusion.com, where we offer the most advanced energy clearing and expansion techniques in the world, with a quantum vortex energy to activate your divine blueprint and life's purpose. When your soul leads the way with cosmic fusion and quantum vortex energy, you can break clear of past difficulties and blocks with the power of the source. With cosmic fusion, the source energy does the work for you. It's easy and effortless. Listen to our free meditation right from our cosmic fusion website, the Cosmic Code Meditation. Sign up for one of our interactive webinars today. Come to Cosmic Fusion. www.kosmicfusion.com to experience an effortless awakening and transformation. Are you ready for an upgrade? Are you ready for a new experience of living in the fifth dimensional magic and powerful connection? Then visit cosmicfusion.com today. cosmicfusion.com.
Your property tax bill. Have you seen it lately? It's frightening. Your property taxes are going up while your home value is going down. It's time to fight back and win. For the real truth about the property tax system, get attorney Pat Quintilian's book, Are You Getting Screwed on Your Property Taxes? How to Find Out and How to Fix It. Attorney Quintilian answers all your questions and gives you the facts you need to fight a property tax bill that is spiraling out of control. You'll also read about what happens to property owners who don't check their property records, only to find out too late they're taxed on square footage, fixtures, and even buildings that they don't own. Is this happening to you? Learn your rights. Buy attorney Pat Quintilian's book today. Are You Getting Screwed on Your Property Taxes? How to Find Out and How to Fix It. Available on Amazon.com.
Back, everyone. We are speaking with Von Brashler. He is the author of a new book, Confessions of a Reluctant Ghost Hunter, a cautionary tale of encounters with malevolent entities and other disembodied spirits. So, Von, you've been telling us this fascinating story about this entity that's been choking people while they sleep. It starts to follow you home, and you find a way to get rid of it in the forest, but now you're coming back to check on these people, and you don't really want to come back because it's a bit creepy. But what happened?
Well, you know, it's kind of embarrassing to admit, but I just kind of hoped that the whole problem would go away, and that it was resolved. You know, so I didn't go back the next day as I suggested I would. I said, sleep on it. We'll see how it goes. You know, either it comes back in the trailer and bothers you, or it's just going to roam the forest and be out of your trailer. And the second day, I kind of felt guilty, like I should go. And this is the weekend, right? So I'm thinking I should go. But I'm working at the newspaper, and I'm telling myself I've got to get caught up. Been spending too much time out there with them. And it's getting late. It's getting dark. I said, well, now it's too late to go out there. And then I'm in the newspaper office all alone, and all the police scanners go off, and the scanners for the emergency vehicles, the fire department. And everybody's saying, you know, got to get up Mount Hood, up near Rhododendron. And I said, wow. So I grabbed my camera and my strobe, and I said, I'm going to take some night pictures of something up there. Something's going on. So I don't need to know where it is. I just follow the herd, and all the response vehicles are headed up the mountain, and dust is a kicking up because this is dusty summer day on a logging trail, gravel road, and they would occasionally stop and they'd try to figure out where they were going, and they seemed to be lost. They couldn't, because it's just everything's, there's so many roads up there, it's a forest, and so they pretty soon they kept getting closer to Rhododendron, and I'm thinking, gee, I hope that fire doesn't spread into their trailer. That would be terrible if the forest fire came their direction or whatever. I assumed it was a fire because there were a lot of fire trucks, and a few police cars. So, but I'm following it, and then they take a turn, and it occurs to me it has to be near them because this is the road turned off to them. And I'm following, and then we take the last turn, and I follow the response vehicles, and I see their trailer burned down.
So
there's the herbalist and her daughter Missy, and they're arm in arm, they're sobbing out there in front of the trailer, and it's just burned to a crisp, and it's too late to put anything out, it's pretty gone, and it's just the trailer, there's no trees burning, just the trailer, and I say, what happened, and they say, I don't know, it just caught fire in the middle of the night, it just caught fire suddenly. And I said, well, what was it? He said, I don't know what it was. It just caught fire. And, you know, the police captain, he's saying, well, did you have candles going? Were you cooking? Did you have problems with the butane tank that it was leaky? Or did you have a campfire going? Or nothing, she said, nothing. We cooked outside on the camp stove outside the front where she would cook her pot herbs and her, you know, and they hadn't cooked at all. There was just nothing. And I said, well, where's your husband? Where's Todd? And she said, oh, he took off. He couldn't take it anymore. He got in the car and drove off. You know, and for a while they were thinking Todd, you know, he was involved. But, you know, he got so freaked out by the events that he just left. And they said, and the worst thing of all was our little dog burned up in the fire because it had been put on a chain and tied underneath the trailer. And
why
their
did
dog,
they do that?
They never put this dog on a leash. It just roamed free. They didn't own a leash.
Oh, so they did not do this.
They did not. They had no idea how this dog had been put on a chain and tied underneath
awful.
The trailer, and it burned up to a crisp. And then I realized that something that I should have noticed when I first went out there and first met them and first took the herbal walk with them and took my son out there for herbal training, and we hunted mushrooms and cooked them in the front of the, you know, trailer where they had a campfire. There was a big tree with names and dates on it. And then I realized that all those names were dog names, and all these dogs had been killed.
Oh.
What a nasty creature to do that.
Yeah, and this is a trailer that obviously, you know, they didn't pay rent. You know, they were kind of, you know, unfortunate setups for this whole thing because the man who owned the trailer was unable to rent it, lease it, or sell it. Apparently nobody wanted to live there. You know, and he just wanted somebody to be a caretaker and just occupy it. And we found, you know, that there were things in the back. I mean, I'd noticed this before the fire, but, you know, it just puzzled me that there was a shed in the back, and there were preserves that were neatly in a row, and they were dated, and somebody had really lovingly put these preserves there. And when they left, they just left in such a hurry that they left all the preserves.
Mm.
And I think this situation had gone on for some time.
Mm.
So, yeah, it really ruined their lives, all of them, pretty much.
Mm. This is a terrible
story. And I suppose
story.
That creature's probably still there. I'm not going to go look for it, I'll tell you that
mm-hmm.
much.
Mm.
Well, hearing stories like this, I mean, this would definitely turn me from being a de-ghoster, very nice and friendly, into a hunter. Because anything that would do this type of damage and hurt all these very innocent dogs or other animals is something that, in my opinion, needs to be hunted. But it's so your mirror ceremony obviously didn't work, and he wasn't contained by the stake that you used on the ground, nor the salt.
Well, yes and no, because. He could have done all those things from outside the trailer.
Yes.
My feeling is that it didn't re-enter the trailer because they hadn't. That when I later talked to them, they didn't tell me that they'd seen the little girl with curls, or they didn't tell me that. Well, they didn't tell me that it had choked them or anything. You know, I was led to believe that it was just kind of angrily sitting outside the trailer.
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That was the feeling I got. I may be wrong. But I think I got it out of the trailer, but I didn't get it out of their lives is the point.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't get it off the property, didn't get it away from them. And just getting mm-hmm. it out of the room is where they, you know, dress and sleep and cook their breakfast wasn't enough. You know, it needed to be, they needed to move, you know, and I don't
mm-hmm.
know that anything could be done with that creature, to be honest with you.
Just awful. Helene, do you pick up on anything with this creature? What kind of creature does
really
stuff like
to.
That?
No.
I don't
blame
I don't really
you.
Want to, but there are, I guess if you want to call them creatures or earth energies, that are very, very nasty. And we're not talking about your run-of-the-mill gnome or even troll or fairies or anything like that, but there is a percentage of them that are extremely vicious.
Yeah.
And if you look at the tales from Europe, they're talking about very dangerous trolls and things that really do very, very destructive behaviors around people.
And
I haven't seen that here. I've only heard of one in the area that's a possibility, and I won't go near the place.
Yeah,
because I believe
you
exists
hear these,
there.
You do hear these stories, you know, and I should point out that this is an old-growth forest. It was filled with moss and lichen and old trees, and just thick.
Mm-hmm. I'm not getting it as demonic or anything.
Yeah.
No. No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Yeah. Yeah.
But vicious is a good word for this. This is So that's a creepy story. Thank you for sharing. And
but, you know, what I'd really like to ask about is what people worry about in their homes.
Yeah.
And I really have to say, and I want to know what your opinion of this is that really fear is the worst thing you can have in a home.
Yeah, because they feed off the energy and they're attracted to that. And so the last thing you want to do, I mean, I've coexisted with ghosts in house before. I mean, I have some now, and they've been there a long, long, long time. They're pioneers that had lived there 100, 120 years ago, and they walk around in their turn of the century clothes, and they're quite happy, and they I think they understand they're dead, but they really don't care, you know?
Yeah.
And they're walking around watching us, and they're very happy and very sweet, very loving, and I would say they're friendly ghosts, you know? I don't mind them watching me. Doesn't bother
me. Well, people have called me and said, well, should I have the ghost removed? And it's like, well, is it bothering you? Is it disrupting your life? Is it making you afraid? Is there something there? And they're like, no, I'm just not sure if I should keep it in the house. And I said, well, it's in the house before you were.
That's right.
It's not
and it'd be the house
impinging on your
you
life.
On.
It doesn't really matter, you know?
You know, people need to think, too, you know, of the reality of spirits being all around us all the time. You know, you can hardly go anywhere that there aren't other spirits occupying roughly the same area. Maybe they're slightly in a different, let's say, different dimension. You know, they're not visible to you. But they occasionally slip in and slip out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can think of ritualistic ghosts that I've seen that would come out at certain times of the day and do something over and over and over and over. And there would be a group.
That's like a loop.
Yeah. It would be like ghost communities, and I suppose, you know, that they just keep ever adding to the ensemble.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't bother anybody, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I personally think it's sad, and if you're somebody good like Helen, you know, my teacher, maybe you can help them, and maybe you just have to say, well, that's the way that it's going to be, and live with it, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. But
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Helene. Then I've
got
a question. I just have a question from the chat room about the use of the stake. How does that work? Somebody wants to know.
Okay, the principle.
Because
is
we're used to hearing about stakes for vampires to wipe out a vampire, but this is a whole different thing.
I know. If only.
Hello.
Did Vaughn get taken over by that creature? Vaughn, are you still there? He's showing up on the board, but he may have gotten dropped. We'll have to kiss. You know, that little creature caused so much trouble for those people. That's really a terrible thing.
Sad.
But
sad.
Luckily, this is not the run-of-the-mill thing that people
do. No,
no. So
it's not run-of-the-mill. That's a highly a unique and unusual case, I would say. But some of the ghosts that are in houses are... They can be angry, and they can be sort of pranksters is the word I like to use, because they like to play tricks on people and get them upset and feed off of that fear energy, you know.
Well, this is why I'm glad you brought that up about fear energy, because that that fear energy is a food source for them. And that is
some of them, yeah.
Yeah, for some of them, and that's something you don't want to encourage in any way. So that's, and plus I also think if people can stay grounded and not get afraid of the phenomena, then they're in a much better position to work with it gently, if it can be worked with gently. Obviously, this last thing couldn't be.
No. But, you know, it's also the idea that people watch too many movies and things like that, and they think they're going to get possessed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very rare occurrence, very, very rare. It needs a certain set of sort of unique circumstances to have that happen. And the majority of us have enough light in us that we don't want that in our body, and so it won't be able to come in, you know.
Right.
And ghosts aren't necessarily interested in possessing. They're more interested in attaching and sort of raising your misery so that they're feeling happy.
Exactly.
You know, that's the part that when you get into the fear mode, it sort of attracts them even more. Of course, if it is dangerous, if fires are being lit in your house and, you know, crazy things are going on, like choking and stuff, that's a whole different ball of wax.
Well,
but when talking
is.
About doors opening and closing and noises in the wall and that kind of stuff, you can just say, cut it out, you don't impress me, you know.
Well, I think we've got Vaughn back. Vaughn, are you back with us?
Good.
Hi, I am. I'm sorry we lost each other.
Yeah.
That happens sometimes. Thank you for calling back in. So, again, we were talking, the question that was asked was about the use of, proper use of a stake when you're doing this kind of
Well, as it was described to me, what you want to do is call on the four cardinal points, the four archangels who guard the four directions. You want to call on the watchtower. You want to invoke heavenly guardianship of it. And so you're staking the four directions and calling on the four directions and the four archangels who are responsible for the four corners. That's the way it was taught to me. And
So do you actually drive a stake into the ground at the four corners?
Yeah, the first time I did it I was instructed to bring stakes. And so I get out there to do this church in Portland, Oregon. And I'm out there, and it's like concrete, right? It's like a one-square-block church in the middle of town. And it's just like sidewalks, you know. It's like that's the perimeter of the building. And, of course, I have no hammer. I didn't think to bring a hammer. So how do I put the stakes in? I thought, like, oh, she didn't tell me I needed something to pound the stakes in. So, yeah, I always add, and a hammer. So the stakes you put in the four corners, and then it's important that you're invoking the four cardinal points of the four archangels. And if you know who they are, it's good to call on them by name and invoke them and ask for their help. And you want to do this verbally, not, you know, I think this needs to be done aloud.
That's so interesting, because I've never actually put stakes anywhere. I just do it energetically by sealing the four corners of the perimeter.
That's what I did originally. And then I thought, I said, I think I need to actually drive the stakes in physically. I need to call on the four archangels. And before I was just doing it just, you know, energetically. I was just, doing this and going through the motions, and that may be enough, but that wasn't the way it was taught to me. Anyway, it's so cool when you can bring like a little bag of tricks with you. At least, you know what? At least it feels
people
like
you
got.
Yeah.
Yeah. At least it feels like you got weapons, you know. But you know, it's, you know, you're talking about driving a stick through a vampire. I mean, there were times I wish I had Buffy the Vampire Slayer with me.
Oh God, don't we
instead
all?
Of four stakes, you know, which I didn't have to do with. Because there are some very creepy situations. And you know, there are also psychic attacks of people who are living. So I get into that a little bit, too. And that's kind of a sensitive area because you don't want to defame any people. But there are psychic attacks of people, too, that inhabit houses and invade spaces psychically.
Oh, yeah.
Spirit invasion of a house, if you will. Mm-hmm. That's bothersome. Mm-hmm. Especially mm-hmm. you go and knock on the door and confront them and they say, I don't have an idea what you're talking about, my dear boy. Uh-huh.
And they might not.
Yeah, they might not. That's true.
Sometimes it's their higher self or some other aspect of them that's doing that kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
Yeah.
Like, who knows where we go in our dreams and what we do. Sometimes
right.
we hope we're doing good.
Mm-hmm.
Not just having an adventure.
Mm-hmm.
But what would be
true.
The symptoms of a psychic attack? Give us some idea of what you've encountered.
Well, in my case, it was like they had a double A-frame house, and I would lie on the carpet in the living room, look up at the skylight, and instead of the sky, I would see faces looking down at me, and
ooh.
recognizing the faces. Didn't
mm-hmm.
make it easier to take,
mm-hmm.
and knowing they shouldn't be there, I called them the floating heads, and just
mm-hmm.
you know my thing, same thing with UFOs. I just say, you don't bother me, I don't bother you. I'll just walk around you, and so that's it was kind of my thing. So I said, you know, you don't bother me, I don't bother you. You can hang outside the window and make funny faces at me, and I'll make funny faces back at you. But then people would come over and say, somebody looking at me through the skylight. I said, that's impossible. How could anybody get up there?
Mm-hmm.
Think about that. And it's like, yeah, I saw it. But, you know, when they started going into my bedroom and turning it upside down so that I get up in the morning and everything that was in the drawers is now on the floor and everything that was on the floor is now in the drawers. And then I would go and shave and I'd come back and everything was put back away neatly. Or there would be things that would be taken from, like, my house, and I knew very well I would set something on the kitchen table, and then I would go outside to the car and come back, and it wouldn't be on the kitchen table. And I would, you know what you do, you go and you look every conceivable place it could be, and then you
mm-hmm.
check every place again, and then every place again, and then you widen the net, you look places it couldn't be. And then there it is on the table. That doesn't make any
yeah.
sense.
Well, that kind of goes gone. Into another dimension, don't you think?
Yeah. So, mm-hmm. yeah, we have all these trans-dimensional creatures that are popping in on us, the
mm-hmm.
cracks between the world, which, you know, we're coming up on Halloween, and this is supposed to be one of the time, according to Celtic legend, that the veil between the physical world and the spirit world would be thin, and we could see the spirits of the dead.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the idea wasn't to invite them into your house and play Parcheesi or but the idea was to leave little offering like food, you know,
mm-hmm.
so they would like eat and go away.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah, yeah.
Do you think that the veil is thinner now than it has been in the past?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
I do. Mm-hmm. I would like to think that there's a veil. It's like an iron curtain, but it seems to be sometimes extremely thin.
Yeah.
But then, you know, once you know how to ruffle the veil and break it open and see into it, you know, then it becomes easier to kind of look past the veil.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you can't put the genie back in the bottle. That would be so nice. I wish I could unlearn everything I've learned and just go back to being a community journalist. That would be so nice.
Really?
And go mushroom hunting.
You don't think you'd miss
mountain.
All of this?
Well, it has caused me some sleepless nights, you know, wondering what they're up to, you know. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, yeah, it's okay. But I the main thing is that people need to be aware that ghosts aren't all just fun. They're not all Casper.
No.
They're not. So what would be your advice to somebody who is thinking about going out and visiting a cemetery or something like that as a ghost hunter? What would you tell them?
You know what? I even think, well, I don't know. I'm probably going to upset a lot of people, including you. I think it's kind of unethical. You know, what is your intent? Are you hunting? Are you living vicariously? Are you out for thrill seeking? Or are you attempting to help someone resolve a situation?
Mm-hmm.
You know, my teacher was a facilitator. She would try to help people who had serious problems.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she would try to help spirits move on. And she would try
no,
to help
that doesn't upset me at all. I mean, I think that
no.
you brought up
no.
a very good point about all of this and a lot of the media that we do get drawn in by and watch. that it becomes very titillating. But as you said, a lot of what they're doing is unethical and immoral. And I agree.
Yeah.
I agree,
too.
They're stalking them. And it's really cruel because you have to consider that, in a sense, they are time looped. They are stuck in time and place, and playing again like an old LP record, caught in the groove over and over and over and over and over, and they can't get away from you. And you go and hunt them. It's like hunting geese in a pond. It's cruel, you know.
Yeah.
They can't, you know.
But do you think that,
them like that?
Do you think that every loop is actual ghost activity? Because my impression of it on occasion has been that it's simply like an electromagnetic imprint on the place where something occurred rather than actual ghost activity.
You're probably right about that. You know, my next book I'm going to write about electronic activity and ghosts. Because,
it's almost
like a
photograph remains with the place.
Yeah. Rather than
having ghosts there. And other times it is ghosts that are stuck. But on occasion I've seen things like that is simply like a video loop playing over and over, but there's no real spirit there. I don't know if I'm describing that the right way.
I think you're really onto something there. I think it is kind of an imprint, something that's happened and keeps playing itself out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some emotion and
occurrences are so powerful that they just leave a lasting impression, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that makes total sense. I mean, there's a lot of power and emotion, and anything that's trapped like that can leave a strong energy behind.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But we leave energy ourselves. I mean, everybody knows.
We do.
Well, that when you walk into an empty house, you get a feeling for what that house was. What was the emotion that was there before? Is this a good place or not a good place? Everybody feels that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
nothing is ever lost. Just keeps looping around. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
old radio waves and television shows are just
bouncing
around.
Of all the ghosts that you mentioned and the entities that you talk about in your book, the thing that scared me the most was the story about the chapel. And that wasn't...
Yeah.
That was not about entities or ghosts. It was about people. That really
was. It was about people. It was really, creepy. But it involved a girl who had died and was calling. After she had died, she was calling her sister. And it was really bothering her sister, which precipitated a search for this lost girl. And eventually we found it, the body of a girl in the lake. And nearby we found decapitated birds, and there was something very, very strange going on in there. And it's a fact that she was getting these calls from her sister at a time that her sister must have been dead. So that was kind of a ghost angle. But the spirits of these people that seemed to be, and from the chapel, that seemed to be the force behind it somehow. We never really proved it. You know, it's an unsolved mystery. But it seemed that these people were living people, and they were
out of the Twilight Zone, the way you described them.
I wouldn't say they were evil. But you know, people would go that way. Like we sent a reporter out to check them out, because, you know, they would just give everybody the bum rush. They'd say, "Oh, we're just these little old ladies out here in the woods, and we, you know, keep to ourselves. We have this little chapel, and you know, we heal, and you know, and so we sent our mountain correspondent, who was very brave, and he went up and he posed as somebody who came to them for a healing, and so they took him in the chapel and they had started sitting on him and jumping up and down and chanting. And he ran out of there screaming. And he said, "I will not go back. I will not write about it. I will not talk about it. I'm done with it." And this was the guy that had investigated the mob when they tried to buy the resort up on Welch's, Oregon, and going out and talking to them. You know, he had his, well, let's say he came off the mountain once and the brakes on his truck just. He was a pretty brave soul, but he wouldn't go back to that
Well,
traveling
no, the little
the
old
camp.
Lady scared him more than the mob. I mean, that's very
yeah.
telling. They scared me. I mean, when I read what you wrote about that,
yeah.
my God, everybody's got to run out and get the book just to read that one story. I mean, these late little old ladies, I get the feeling they weren't really little old ladies. They were something else. And how scary. How scary. Oh, my gosh.
Well, we'd see them in town, and they'd walk around, and they would say that they were good people, and they were trying. You know, I remember they came into the newspaper and wanted to donate money to a burn victim. His daughter worked there part time, but you know there were legends about them. People who could see, you know, psychically,
mm-hmm.
they could see that they had wrapped themselves in a lot of purple light, you know. They obviously thought they needed protection, these little sweet ladies, and they rarely came to town. They kept to themselves. They didn't want to talk about the fact that the missing girl had, in fact, gone to visit them, and then shortly after that disappeared. They didn't want to talk about that. They didn't want to talk to the police. They didn't want to talk to the newspaper. They didn't want to talk to anybody. And when I started seeing things that kind of bothered me, I mean, I went back looking for Helen saying, whoa, lady, am I way out of my depth here. I need help. And she'd moved back with her family, and I talked to her former employer, Lewis, and he told me the ultimate protection spell. It's just send back just pure love at them. Just send pure
mm-hmm.
love at them. And,
mm-hmm.
and I looked at him, and I said, that's nice. He said, no, listen. Send pure love back. He said, there's no stronger force in the universe.
That's right.
And I said, right. And I said, he said, now listen, I'm not just, you know, mixing poetic here. I'm telling you something. He said, you visualize pure love and you focus on them. You visualize and you send it to them. And I said, well, if something bad happens, am I not karmically responsible? And he said, no. What they do to the pure love that you've sent to them is that's their karma.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that, and the little chapel in the woods is no more. So, it's good advice, you know, to protect yourself, to wrap yourself in, with protection and to ground yourself and to avoid situations. And then there are sometimes when you're in a psychic attack, you really have to send it back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's frightening, isn't it?
And that's
yeah,
those people
yeah.
scare me. Now you said the chapel is no more. You mean it's gone?
Yeah, it's no more. It's gone. It just one night it just blew up. It just I don't know blew up.
It blew up.
Of those unsolved mysteries. One of those unsolved mysteries on the mountain, just like Sasquatch.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
I have an idea. I have an idea what happened, but it's so far fetched that I dare not say what it is. I think that someone just visualize pure love and send it to them, and they couldn't deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
Quite the story. And again, for everybody that's listening tonight, you've got to get a copy of this great book. It's Confessions of a Reluctant Ghost Hunter, a cautionary tale of encounters with malevolent entities and other disembodied spirits by our guest, Von Broschler. This has just been such a wonderful conversation about all these spooky things. I don't know if I'm going to be able to sleep tonight.
Well, thank you. I just hope nobody contacts me now because of the show, because I'm retired. I don't want any more to do with this.
Oh, no more de-ghosting for you?
Well, I see ghosts all the time, and you know, and sometimes I help them move on, and sometimes I just, you know, acknowledge them, you know. I don't go looking for trouble, but you know, sometimes you have to deal with situations, and I have the greatest respect for people who do go into these haunted situations and really try to resolve the situation.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it is helpful because that energy is vibrating at a discordant
yep.
rate, and so if we can all work together at getting it to a harmonious place, it's better for everybody, not just the people in the house,
right.
but the people in the whole town. It makes a really big difference.
Right.
So, Helene, you've been asked to clear a house recently. Are you going to go do that?
I haven't gotten the information I need yet.
still waiting.
What's interesting about this one is I just go to my guides and the angels I work with and ask them if I'm supposed to clear it.
Yeah,
and sometimes they say no.
Yeah, that's smart.
Sometimes they say no.
Yeah.
Because there are some things we have a purpose for doing and some things we don't.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I'm sure you've run across this before, is that occasionally you find some people who actually call this kind of stuff to their house.
Yeah, that's really unfortunate.
And it doesn't matter if you clear it because it's just coming back again.
It's coming back. And then you have the I keep running into these people, these poor unfortunate people, that they'll have a fragment of a ghost kind of hung on to them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
mm-hmm.
kind of bad. It just kind of follows. You can't get rid of it, you know, and it goes wherever they go. And
yeah, it's attached.
I mean, there's ways to clear that, but it's like, you know, it's going to take some time and it's going to take some effort.
Well, they have
to be always
on board, and not everybody wants to leave that hole in their life. They sort of understand the attachment is there, and they find it pleasing in a way, you know. And
yeah, you actually have
difficult.
To, you know, I think my teacher was right. You actually have to communicate with it, contact it, and
mm-hmm.
you have to convince it to leave, you know. And mm-hmm. and so it's going to take, it's probably going to take someone helping you to do this, and,
mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you're going to have to do it yourself. You know,
mm-hmm.
And there is a way. You know, you can get outside yourself and look back at yourself. You know,
mm-hmm.
through meditation
mm-hmm.
and then order it out. You know, and say out. You know, but
mm-hmm.
out it, outing the ghost. I'm always intrigued too. You know, where people think, you know, that just because it smells like their Aunt Ruth who passed away 5 years ago, or Uncle Harry, they smell it's his cigar, that it really is Harry and it really is the cigar you're smelling, you know.
Yeah,
because,
not always.
You know, it's very deceptive what,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, they're dealing with thought form consciousness and they're projecting this.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, you know, so I keep running into people that say, "Yeah, I'm a ghost hunter, and I go in with all this equipment, and I capture them in my
EVP
in my equipment, you know."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But you know, mm-hmm. what have you got? You know, what have you got? You've got what they want you to think you've got, you know. And
mm-hmm.
it's like, I don't know what you've got. You know, who knows what you've got?
Right, that's true. But the worst ones I found are the ones that call them in by using a Ouija board or dabbling in the occult when they don't know what they're doing.
Yes, the old seance thing where you're actually calling on the ghost. Do you think it would be so fun to say goodbye
to Grandpa?
To Grandma.
But it's not Grandpa that shows up, right?
It's not going to be Grandpa that comes back, you know?
No.
It's not going to be Grandpa. And if it is, shame on you. Let him rest. Let him move on, you know?
Right.
Good
grief.
Don't be calling back the dead. They have more. They have better things to do now than hang out with you.
I've got another question for you, Vaughn, from the chat room. Someone would like to know if you ever see ghosts that look solid, like live people.
Yes, not regularly, but I do. I saw one once that just popped into the top of my stairs outside my bedroom, my double A frame in Brightwood, and it just as clear as day. He was a Native American. He looked like he was a shaman. He was dressed in very bright clothes and feathers. I remember there was a lot of red in his costume. And he had paint on him, and he looked absolutely startled. Well, you know, it was there had been a summering ground there, so there were a lot of spirits there of Indians in there, and then there were a lot, there was a flood along the river where I lived there, and there were unfortunate deaths, you know, and that's always, you know, when you die suddenly, sometimes, you know, the spirit is confused.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you're not ready, you know, to die, and you hadn't really planned to die, and you're disoriented. So anyway, to get to the story, yes, this Indian just popped out in front of me, and it's like, whoa, you know, with the headgear and everything. He's like really tall because the feathers go straight up in the air, you know. And he's just looking at me, and I'm looking at him, and I go, whoa. And he does this double take, you know, where he just jumps back too, like, whoa, you know. And I'm saying, like, this is my house. I order you out of my house. And he looked at me, like, with startled eyes, and he was gone, you know. I mean,
yeah.
He just popped in, you know. He just, the
yeah.
cracks in the earth, he just popped in. He
mm-hmm.
wasn't trying to bother me. It just happened.
No.
But he was very, I saw him very distinctly. A lot of times, psychics will often say that they see them in their mind's eye, and that's how you see them. Or there's another trick. You can look out of the, you'll shift your eyes a little to the left, and you look askance.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see them out of the left corner of your eye. That's an old
mm-hmm.
trick. So you see them that way. And then a lot of times, they'll just like leave breadcrumbs, like the one I was trying to get out of that big church in Portland. It kept going. The room ahead of me was always turning on lights, and then I would get there and turn off the light, and then it would go ahead and turn on a light. And I spent the whole day playing cat and mouse with this guy in the church, and he didn't really seem to bother anybody, so I just said, that's it, I'm getting out of here. And I'm sitting out in the parking lot in the Buick with my friend, who said, please help us get the ghost out of our church. And he's saying, well, did you find it? I said, I couldn't exactly find it, but there was something in there. And I look up, and on the top of the church, and it's a big building, and then the light started flickering, and I said, I see it, it's there. And they just, you know, so they do kind of make themselves known in those ways.
Mm-hmm.
They like to play with electronics. That's an interesting thing.
And electricity, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sometimes they interfere with electrical things without meaning to. It's just that their field is strong and they sort of interrupt
it. Yeah. Yeah.
And sometimes
yeah.
it's intentional. Yeah.
Well, my sister used to get calls from our brother when he died. And,
Wow.
And it was really weird because he died in North Dakota and she lived in Western Washington. And they were not on the best of terms. They fought as children. They never really were very close. And when he died, she started getting calls, and it sounded like him screaming at her and calling her names that she hadn't heard since she was a little girl, and only from him. And finally, she just handed the phone to her husband and said, who is this? He handed it back. He says, that's your brother. She says, that's impossible. He's dead.
Oh, my goodness.
So the next time the phone rings and he's on there screaming at her, she hands it to her daughter, who's, you know, 22 years old, and said, who is this? It's my uncle. And she says, well, he's dead. She said, well, tell him. You know, after we cremated him, when we cremated him, she got a last phone call that said, I'm burning. And then after that, no more phone calls. So I'm a firm believer in cremation. But the phone calls ended. I'm glad he didn't call me because I wouldn't have known what to say. You're dead. Goodbye. You know.
Wow.
Yeah. The spirit communication, it's just pictures, photographs, you know, they'll just appear on your film when you
mm-hmm.
least expect it. Yeah. I used to see them in the dark room. I would have spirits in the dark room. And when I'm developing a picture, I would see a form in the picture, you know, like a smiling face looking at me. And then it would turn into, you know, a picture of a tree or something that I'd actually photographed, you know. And I'm thinking, like, wow, that was cool. and once I did that, and someone's in the dark with me. We were doing Curlian photography, and two others in the dark room, and said, who's this woman standing here? I said, describe her. He described her, and he said, I know who she is. That's my guide. I said, she's watching me. trouble or something. But yeah, they don't always appear as solid to you, but
mm-hmm.
that doesn't mean they're not there.
Mm-hmm.
Not
yes,
hardly.
For sure. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, like you said, I think we have a more populated area than we have ever known. It looks like you have a question from a caller, so let's take this question and then we're going to have to say goodnight. But we
okay.
have Mike in New York. and he would like to know if you have ever felt that artifacts hold energies. Hi,
yes.
Mike. Welcome to the
yes.
show.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. As I mentioned to, as I just mentioned, I've collected war souvenirs for many years. Large collection, specializing in World War II, between uniforms, helmets, firearms, medals, you name it. And a lot of it was brought back. I mean, I get my first German helmet. I was 7 years old from a veteran that brought it home.
Wow.
And I loaned items to the History Channel. It's pretty broad spectrum. But there was one collector that I had a discussion with. He wrote a book, Richard Kimmel, about haunted history,
yeah.
saying that
yeah.
artifacts yeah. can be hit. And he was telling me, oh, no, you've got to put a tape recorder, a cassette recorder in the middle of your room and leave it on record, and you're going to be surprised at what you hear. And I told him, you know, I don't need an Amityville war souvenir room.
Nope.
Thank you very much. I'll switch over to Beanie
yeah.
Babies. If I see levitating swords in the room, that's not a good sign. But
yeah.
I was wondering if you ever ran into it or what the possibility is.
Well, I do think that... Yeah, I agree. I think, Mike, that a lot of objects carry, I call it second attention. There would be like a latent imprint, like if you think of like psychometry, there would be like an energy imprint, and you can actually carry energy in something. Well, for example, now Lewis and his teacher, Leon, they taught us how to send stones back and forth in the mail to each other. And we'd load them up with whatever we thought our friends needed. And so long after I left Oregon, I was exchanging rocks by mail with people. And we were loading them up. And,
mm-hmm.
There is something you can put energy into an object. I know with the Kirlian camera, we would often get a lot of a Kirlian burst off of like coins. Things that have been handled a lot would have a lot of energy. And then something that hadn't been handled a lot might not have a lot of energy, unless it was
but
a living thing, like a feather.
But it's not a haunt.
Leaf.
But it wouldn't be
yeah.
a haunted item, per se.
No.
It would have the energy,
no,
but
not haunted. No, no. That would generally not be the case. I wouldn't rule it out, but I think that it's a different kind of an energy. It's just a latent imprint.
Right, right. All right, well, that's interesting. That's a relief because I wanted to make sure I don't open my collection room door one of these days and see somebody standing there in full uniform.
Yeah, give me my sword back.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's all. I don't want to start explaining how I ended up with that. That's real. By the way, you did lose the war. Sit down.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, Mike, thank you so much for your call. We really appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
Great question. Well,
mm-hmm. yeah.
Vaughn, this has been a wonderful evening, and I know you've enlightened us and a lot of people in our audience tonight. So thank you so much for a wonderful show. And again, the name of your book is Confessions of a Reluctant Ghost Hunter. Everybody, make sure you get a copy. We will be giving a copy away of this great book. But you've got to be signed up on our newsletter and following us on Twitter and Facebook. So please do those things, and you'll be entered into the contest to win this book. And we will be letting you know if you're the winner. So make sure that you're signed up, and you will be hearing from us very soon. So everybody, keep listening. Next week, we've got more spooky stuff coming up. This is Spooky October. So be sure to tune in. Also, make sure you sign up on angelslighthouse.com. Lots of good stuff coming your way. Vaughn, thank you again for a wonderful show. And happy Halloween.
Thank you. It was fun.
All
thank
right.
you. Happy Halloween to you. Halloween
thank
Eve.
You.
Good night, Vaughn.
Good night.
What fun.
I know it. This has just been a great, great time tonight and kicking off our spooky October month. So, again, you know we've got some really incredible people also continuing this month right up and through Halloween. I can't wait to get them all on the show. So, Helene, I'm so glad you're feeling better. Keep it up and have a wonderful evening, everybody.
Good night, Patricia.
Good night, Helene.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Tune in next week for another radio adventure with